You can find out more about our efforts in advocacy, community strengthening, information exchange, and knowledge production at our website, www.msmgf.org. Before I present today's webinar speakers, I'm just going to do some quick additional housekeeping. The presentation will last about 40 to 45 minutes, and we'll have a 15-minute period of answering questions. Everyone will be muted during the presentation, we hope, but you can type in questions in the chat window that you see to your lower left, and I will keep a note of all the questions and pose them to the presenters right at the end. If you're only on the audio and you don't see the online console for the presentation, you can email me questions at kmakofane@msmgf.org. That's kmakofane@msmgf.org. Again, we'll address all the questions that we receive during the discussion period after the presentations. To those who are listening to only the audio, you can also view the slides online if you have enough bandwidth. Just follow the instructions in your reminder email. And again, in the last reminder email, there should be a link that allows you to download the slides and follow them yourself if you can't see them online. Lastly, after today's webinar, we will have an audio recording and the slides available on the MSMGF website, and it will be together with all the webinars that we've done, and the shortcut to these webinars is bit.ly/MSMGF webinars. That's bit.ly/MSMGF webinars. Okay, so now that we've got all that out of the way, welcome to today's presentation. It is titled, Easing the Way to Pleasure and Safety, Lubricant Safety and Access Around the Globe. We are proud to partner with International Rectal Microbicide Advocates, or IRMA, and the Global Lubricant Access Movement, or GLAM, to present this webinar. And, of course, we are grateful to the Center for the Development of People in Malawi and the ANOVA Institute in South Africa for also participating. We are privileged to have Marc-André LeBlanc, a founder of IRMA, Kevin Reeby, a specialist physician and researcher at the ANOVA Institute, Kent Kindera, the director of the GMT initiative at AMFAR, and Gift Trappins, the executive director of the Center for the Development of People in Malawi. And I will say a little bit more about each of our distinguished presenters just before they each speak. First, Marc-André will give us an overview of the various substances that people use as lubricants during sex and introduce us to some important concepts when thinking about the safety of lubricants. Kevin will pick up where Marc-André left off by talking to us about a study that his group conducted where they assessed an aspect of safety of lubricants commonly used by men who have sex with men here in South Africa. We will then change gears a little bit and speak about accessibility of lubricants with a focus on accessibility in Africa. And Kent Kindera will give us a sense of the shortage of condom-compatible lubricants, according to research that the Global Lubricant Access Movement, or GLAM, has conducted, and he'll say a bit more about that. And finally, Gift Trappins will give us an example of successful advocacy around lubricant access in Malawi. So first, I want to introduce Marc-André. Marc-André has worked in community-based HIV/AIDS movement for 20 years at the local, national, and international levels. For the past 10 years, he's focused on the development of new HIV prevention options. He is the co-founder of the International Rectal Microbicide Advocates, as I mentioned, and leads their global efforts to ensure the safety of sexual lubricants. He has recently written about his perspectives as a PrEP user and as an advocate for the development of new HIV prevention options. Marc-André loves movies. He got a film studies degree while working full-time just for the sheer fun of it, and he is now leading advocacy efforts to get ice cream and popcorn recognized as a new basic food group in Canada's food guide. Thank you, Marc-André. The floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Kalitso. Good day to everyone, and thank you to the Global Forum for the invitation, and in particular to Kalitso and Carlos for the invitation to join this call. I won't give you a bit of an introduction to IRMA. I will give you the website to the organization, and you can look up all of the wonderful things that IRMA does afterwards if you don't already know the work that we do. What I do want to touch on today, as Colette mentioned, were three things. What guys are using as lube for anal sex, what we know about the safety of these products, and what's being done to answer the question of lubricant safety. And just to point out that I will heavily focus on what we know about safety for rectal use, but I will touch on safety for vaginal use as well, because some of the research is relevant for both compartments, if you will. So first, let's take a look at what lubes we use for anal sex. The information I'm going to provide to you comes from a large internet-based survey IRMA conducted a few years ago. Nearly 9,000 people from over 100 countries answered the survey, which was available in multiple languages. Keep in mind that being an internet-based survey on lubes used for anal sex, it's not surprising that a vast majority of respondents were men from North America and Europe, and who responded to the English survey, which has an impact on some of the answers we got in the survey. So we asked several questions in the survey, including what lubes people used when they had anal sex. This table summarizes the responses from the English survey. We asked people what lubes they used when they were top, when they were bottoms, when condoms were used, and when no condoms were used. We figured that people might use different products depending on the circumstances. Now, on this slide, you see the information for the last column on the previous slide, which are the most commonly named lubes in the English survey listed alphabetically here. You'll notice a couple of things. First, 12 out of the 15 lubes are commercially sold sexual lubricants. Some of these, like Wet or Astroglide or KY, have many different formulations. There are water-based and silicone-based formulations available, warming sensation, tingling sensation, different flavors, etc. For each of those brands, we combined all of the answers into one heading under that brand. You'll also notice that there are three lubes that are not commercially sold sexual lubricants. There's Crisco, Vaseline, and spit or saliva, and I'll come back to this in a moment. Given what Kent will tell us a bit later about lube access, I think it's safe to assume that if we had a greater proportion of respondents from outside North America and Western Europe, we would have seen a greater number of non-commercially sold sexual lubricants on our list. It's important to point out that there are hundreds of sexual lubricants available in stores, on the internet. The respondents to our survey listed well over 100 of these different brands. It's also important to know that people use all kinds of products they have on hand. Some of the responses from our survey are pictured here as examples. There's spit, as I mentioned. People also mentioned pre-cum and cum and vaginal fluid as lubricants they use for anal sex. People also use all kinds of oils available around the house, olive oil, vegetable oil, canola oil, coconut oil. People mentioned baby oil and massage oils, all kinds of hand creams, facial creams, and lotions. Crisco vegetable shortening was on our list as one of the most popular ones, as well as Vaseline, suntan lotion, even cream to treat vaginal yeast infections. Someone even mentioned using Quaker State wheel bearing grease. I'm not even quite sure what that is, but it certainly sounds very butch. However, it's also something that's highly unlikely to be recommended for use on our body's most tender bits. And you may notice something that almost all of the products shown on this slide have in common. Most of them are oil-based, which means they're not compatible for use with latex male condoms. These products will degrade the latex, increasing the risk of the condoms breaking if they're being used. So now that we have in mind some of the commonly used products, what do we know about their safety? Well, sadly, not all that much. It's a bit sad that I can fit a summary of almost all the independent studies assessing the safety of lubes for rectal use on one PowerPoint slide. I'll go over each of these very briefly and point out where you can go for more detailed information on each of these studies if you're interested. So first, a few studies have tested commercially sold louvs in a laboratory to see if they kill HIV or help HIV make copies of itself in a lab setting. It's important to note this is not in humans. I'm not having a scientific background. I usually picture these studies as testing louvs in test tubes and petri dishes and beakers. I'm sure it's more complicated than that, but I just want to point out it's not in humans. So these studies did not find any significant HIV killing properties in most of the louvs. One study found that some louvs helped HIV make copies of itself in the lab. However, another study did not have the same finding. Most of the louvs that have been tested have been found to be hyperosmolar. You'll hear this term a lot if you're looking at research into lubricant safety. Kevin will speak to his study in a minute. I've not included his study in my list here since I knew he'd be presenting, but I know he has similar finding. So what is a hyperosmolar lube? Here's a very simple way of thinking about it. In fact, it's probably oversimplified. We have cells lining the inside of our bodies. These wet cells lining our rectum, our vagina, the mouth, etc., are mucosal membranes. And normally, when these cells are healthy, they're kind of like plump, juicy grapes. But when you put a product that's hyperosmolar in the rectum or in the vagina, the product tends to suck the moisture out of the cells, making them dried up and shriveled like raisins. This is probably not a good thing. This might make it easier for HIV and other STIs to get through these cells and infect us. So a couple of studies have tested louvs on the rectal tissue of mice to see if they cause any problems. The short answer is yes. Most of the louvs that were tested in these two studies were toxic, irritating, and caused damage to the rectal cells of the mice. Again, the concern here is that it might increase the vulnerability to infection from HIV and other STIs if they do this. So far, there's only been one study that's been conducted directly in humans. This study found that putting one of these hyperosmolar lubes that I described earlier in the rectum of humans, even once, caused damage to their rectal tissue. Again, the concern is that this could increase the risk of infection. Whenever you cause damage to the tissues that line the rectum or the vagina, you have to be concerned that this could potentially increase the risk of infection from HIV and other STIs. Damaged tissue could provide a way for HIV and other STIs to get under the protective layer of cells and infect our cells in our immune system that are present underneath. However, to date, this is the only study in humans, and we still don't know if, in fact, this damage to rectal cells is cause for concern. Is it, in fact, enough damage to actually increase the risk of infection or not? We just don't know yet. Another study used cells that are taken from the vaginas and rectums of humans and then tested these tissues in a lab. This study found that some louvs were toxic to cells, and some louvs killed healthy bacteria that live in our bodies. Like many of the other studies, this one found that some louvs are better or worse than others. They're not all equally good or bad. There's a whole range of results from different louvs in each of these studies. And once again, the damage to cells is of concern. And similarly, we need to be concerned about the disruption in the natural balance of healthy bacteria that live in our bodies, specifically in our vaginas and rectums in this case. These bacteria help fight off infection in a number of ways, including by maintaining a certain pH level in those compartments. So you kill off these healthy bacteria and you become more prone to changes in pH, which can lead to things like infections and other conditions that can make it more difficult for our bodies to fight off infection from things like STIs and HIV. Finally, one study asked participants about lube use for anal sex and then tested them for rectal STIs, so to see if STIs such as chlamydia or gonorrhea were present in the rectums of the participants. They found that participants who said that they had used lubes in the last month were more likely to have a rectal STI than those who said they didn't use lube. And this was true regardless of whether they had used condoms or not. So are lubes really to blame here? That's not clear. The study wasn't designed to answer that question. of cause to effect. Something else might be the cause of both the higher rates of lube use and the higher rates of rectal STIs. Another study was conducted to try to clarify this question, and we hope to have answers and results soon from this study. This study also didn't ask participants which lubes they use, so we don't know that from this particular study. The next one that I just mentioned that we're hoping for results soon did ask that. And it wasn't designed, this one, to tell us about the timing of lube use and infection with rectal STI. So it's possible that participants actually already had a rectal STI even before they used lubes in the previous month. So all of that still remains to be determined. So after all that, what do we tell people about lubricant safety if we're doing HIV prevention work? How do we decide ourselves what products to use or avoid? So in 2010, Irma came up with these statements based on the state of evidence in 2010. It's unclear whether any particular type or brand of lube might increase, decrease, or have no effect on acquiring HIV and or rectal STIs. Using a male or female condom is still considered the best way to prevent acquiring both HIV and STIs during anal sex. Condom-compatible lubes are associated with a decreased risk of condoms breaking or slipping. It's not possible at this time to recommend for or against using lubes if someone is having anal sex without condoms. But we know that lube use on its own is not a proven method of preventing HIV or STIs. And really the bottom line is that we need more research urgently to explore if there is a link between lube use and acquiring HIV or rectal STIs. We're likely going to revisit our messaging later this year. Is it going to change? I'm not sure yet, but I doubt it will have changed significantly since there's been less than half a dozen new studies in this area since 2010. In fact, I'm only aware of four new studies, two of which found very similar results to what I've described, and two of which have yet to release their results. So the evidence base has not evolved all that much, sadly, but as I'll point out in a minute, there's reason for hope. If you'd like more detail on the research so far into lube safety, I encourage you to check out the fact sheet and the more detailed Q&A from Irma available on our website at rectalmicrobicides.org. They're available in multiple languages thanks to the generosity of the Global Forum, so that's much appreciated. So just a few points on what's being done to answer this critical question of lubricant safety. Well, obviously, we've made this a priority at Irma, and it's been a priority for us since Irma was created 9 years ago. Other than the global survey and the materials that I mentioned, we've also created a global lube safety working group, which includes advocates and policymakers, and as far as we know, all the researchers in the world who've conducted studies on this topic. Last year, we issued a global call to action on lubricant safety, and we've developed a draft research agenda where we tried to identify some priorities for the field. And we've also been engaging with some regulators, manufacturers, and as I mentioned, researchers. And we've been working hard on lube access, which Kent will discuss in a moment. So last year, the World Health Organization, UNFPA, and FHI 360 issued an advisory note. It's aimed at member states who are considering bulk procuring lubes along with their male and female condoms. It's important to know this is not guidance targeted to individuals, but to the member states of the WHO. So the bottom line is that this advisory note said that lubes can be bulk procured. Not sure why I'm having such a hard time with that. They outline certain issues that member states should consider when bulk procuring lubes. It includes a number of things, for example, making sure that lubes are compatible with condoms, that the osmolarity levels are not too high, and that certain ingredients are not present. In the U.S., the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, commonly called the CDC, is the national government institution responsible for public health. The CDC created a time-limited internal working group that made internal recommendations based on their review of existing data. The CDC also conducted some of their own research as a result, including a monkey study. This is one of the studies which would have results available soon. They're testing lube safety in monkeys, including to test to see if monkeys that have lube in their butts are more or less likely to get infected than non-lubricated monkeys. Then the Office of the Global AIDS Coordinator, which is responsible for PEPFAR, also looked at the issue of lube safety in the last year and a half. It issued a policy statement identifying the need for more research on lube safety. So have we reached a critical mass of interest and attention and concern for lube safety in 2014? Will we see progress? We certainly hope so at IRMA. The WHO has announced that it's undertaking a consultation process and formal literature reviews of the available research in order to update its guidance. And we're eagerly awaiting the results of the new study I mentioned earlier exploring the links between reported lube use and higher rates of rectal STIs to see if they confirm that finding or can clarify it, as well as the CDC monkey study that I mentioned. And by the way, the image shown here may or may not be from the actual CDC study. That's just how I picture the study happening. And certainly IRMA plans to leverage all of this interest from upcoming study results, the WHO, the CDC, PEPFAR, in an effort to make significant progress. Last year, as I mentioned, we issued a global call to action on lubricant safety. We had over 500 organizations and individuals from around the world sign on, including advocates, researchers, manufacturers. And I mentioned we developed a draft research agenda that identifies what we believe to be some of the priorities. It includes the need to determine which tests should be used to assess the safety of lubes, including not just water-based lubes, but also silicone and oil-based lubes, which a lot of people use, especially when they don't use condoms. So these really should be a priority. We also need to determine which tests are needed to assess STI risk, not just HIV risk. Most of the studies so far have focused almost entirely on water-based lubes for a number of reasons, and mostly on HIV risk. So once we know which tests to use, then we need to use them to test a lot more products that have been tested so far. There have been maybe a total of 5 dozen products tested so far, and many have only been tested in 1 or 2 studies. And as I said, there are hundreds of products out there that people use. So we need certainly more lab-based studies, but also more animal studies, and of course studies in humans, to determine if there's any real-world risk. Is any of this that we're seeing in a lab have any impact in actually real-world use in human bodies? We also need to take into account how people actually use lubes. How do they mix them with other products? We know a lot of people mix them with things like tap water and other things. And how much do they use? How often do they reapply? So something might seem safe with just a little bit that's tested once. What if it gets reapplied 5 or 6 times? What's the impact of that? So those are some of the questions that need answers. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll be happy to answer any questions at the end of the webinar.
Thank you, Marc-André, for starting us off with that really good overview and really giving us structure for the rest of the webinar. Folks, again, if you have questions for Marc-André, please go ahead and type them into the chat box or email them to me at kmakofane@msmgf.org, and we will attend to those questions at the end once all the presenters have gone through their presentations. So we continue in this vein with Kevin, who is going to speak about a study that he conducted on lubricant safety. Kevin is an infectious diseases physician working for Health for Men in Cape Town, which is a project of the Inova Health Institute. The Inova Health Institute is an independent nonprofit health research and technical assistance program which partners with the South African Department of Health. Kevin has an interest in sexual health and well-being, especially among MSM, and he undertakes research in the fields of HIV prevention in key populations and has published widely on diverse aspects of HIV. Thanks for joining us, Kevin, and please take us through your study.
Thank you very much, Kaletsa, and thanks to everybody who's joined. So I'm going to describe a study that we did in Cape Town looking at the osmolality of various lubricants. And sorry, I'm just trying to advance to the next slide here. So as we all know, HIV prevention for men who have sex with men has a more limited toolkit than for men who have sex with women, and lubricants form an essential part of this toolkit. But we do have a problem in that the safety of these lubes, as you just heard from Marc-Andre, really can't always be assessed by the end users of the products or by non-profits and non-governmental organizations and health departments who may be doing bulk procurement. So the situation in South Africa has been that there's been very limited condom choice. In fact, the state condom is branded as the choice condom, but we often refer to it as the no-choice condom because there is only one. There's also been no state-funded lubricant previously. However, we are now starting to see our government starting to put out tenders for large-scale lubricant distribution. There is, however, one problem, that the messaging associated with lubricants in the country remains very heteronormative. Now, heteronormative means that heterosexual sex is regarded as the only normal, and any other kind of sex, such as anal sex, is seen by many as being abnormal. These are two examples from our organization of what we would regard as non-heteronormative messaging. We regard all consensual sex as normal, and we withhold any sort of moral judgment about the types of sex that people may be having. So you won't see any reference in these posters to anal sex or vaginal sex. It just talks specifically about the products, and it appeals to a very broad audience. So the question must be asked, why do a lubricant study in Cape Town when you've just heard about these studies that Marc-Andre has described? Well, the problem is that there's been no regional data, and in fact the African region has not really been part of this discourse at all until fairly recently. So there's little or no regional awareness of these lubricant safety issues. We're also seeing an explosion of non-governmental organizations who are now working with men who have sex with men throughout the African region, and part of their programming, their prevention programming, always includes lube and condom distribution. We have a situation where general health providers in the region have very little knowledge of the types of lube and, of course, some of the clinical issues that these lubricants may cause. At the end of the day, one of our main aims is that we really wanted to have a piece of information that was easily accessible in a well-rated but freely accessible journal, which our junior health providers, junior doctors and nurses in the country would access. We felt it was necessary also to raise the issue of osmolality for NGOs and departments of health that are tendering for lubricant and, of course, for end users. Now, something that must be said in South Africa is we have a mark called the South African Bureau of Standards mark, and it is supposedly a mark of high quality. And end users of a huge array of products will look for this mark, and if they see it, will assume that the product has been adequately tested and is fully safe to use. The problem with this is that the SABS does not require osmolality to be tested and does not consider
Hi, everyone. I think we've just lost audio on Kevin, and we are trying to get it back. So please give us a few seconds. Hi, everyone. If you've lost audio, you're in the same boat as all of us. We're trying to get Kevin back on the line so we can continue his presentation. So just please hold on. Okay, everyone, thanks for your patience. We are going to get Kevin back shortly. In the meantime, I think we'll go ahead and pause Kevin's presentation where it was and ask our next presenter to go ahead, Kent, if you're ready. So in this section of the webinar, we're going to talk a bit about the accessibility of lubricants, whereas in the first section, we're talking about the safety of lubricants. And Kent and Dara will give us an idea of how much of a shortage there is of condom-compatible lubricants and how difficult they are to access, and also touch on the support of advocacy efforts to increase accessibility of condom-compatible lubricants, especially in Africa. Kent is the director of the GMT Initiative at AMFAR, the Foundation for AIDS Research, and he manages a small grants portfolio of over 45 community-based organizations working to reduce the spread and impact of HIV among gay men, other men who have sex with men, and transgender people, collectively called GMT. And this work is focused in low- and middle-income countries. Prior to AMFAR, Kent was chief of party on the USAID-funded Male Gender Norms Initiative, which impacted on gender-based violence and HIV in South Africa. So, Kent, if you're ready, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kalesa, and thank you all for joining this call. Kalesa, can I move the slides forward?
Yes, I'm doing that now.
Perfect. Okay. Great. So I'm going to talk a bit about GLAM, which is the Global Lube Access Mobilization Campaign. And I want to thank the partners. Really, this is an initiative of IRMA, the International Rectal Microbicide Advocates. However, it's in partnership and supported by AMFAR, AVAC, and a new partner, which is COC Netherlands, who's just joined us. And really, it's a pretty simple concept of recognizing a lot of what you've just heard from Marc-André and Kevin about the lack of access to condom-compatible lubricant. So really, the campaign is mainly a tagline, which is "And Lube," which is basically, as my colleague from South Africa, Tian Johnson, summarizes, whenever someone says condoms, we say "And Lube." You can't say one without the other, and too often that's exactly what happens, is that too often we are distributing condoms, but too often lubricant isn't a part of that, and especially in Africa, as was mentioned earlier, this is a major challenge. We recognize it's a major challenge for folks outside of Africa, but clearly the bulk of the problem is in Africa, and so hence the GLAM campaign to date has focused a lot more on Africa. So once again, summarizing, it's pretty simple, but we're helping folks when they hear the word condom, when they see the word condom, they should be saying "and lube." A bit of history around GLAM. This was started actually as a part of IRMA's Project ARM, which is African Rectal Microbicides. There was a meeting that was held in Addis Ababa around the ICASA conference in December 2012. And it was sort of a realization that during so much of lubricant access that was happening, actually was being done through suitcases, through folks who were traveling, and many of us being those folks who were bringing lubricant to different parts of the world, basically decided enough. We were tired of carrying all these lubes in our bags and also recognizing some of the challenges that we could run into with customs and things like that. So hence the GLAM campaign was started. It really took off and a lot farther with the International AIDS Conference in Washington, AIDS 2012, where IRMA produced a number of stickers, and we really also really started talking about the issue of lubricant access. Nuanced with a lot of the work that IRMA, as Marc-André and what Kevin was just talking about, in terms of the safety issues. And so, you know, nuancing that message around lubricant is important, but we also have to continue to do research on what is safe, compatible, condom-compatible lubricant. This is our colleague from Swaziland, Kolile, who actually, if any of you were at the AIDS 2012 conference, there was a large booth on condoms as a main part of the conference, and of course lubricant wasn't present, so we were very active at that booth, sort of saying, this is perfect, here we have condoms, but we don't have any lube mentioned. We actually made it into the White House, my colleagues Joel Nannan and Bisi Alini, with promoting lubricant, and I just wanted to put a shout-out to Jim Pickett, who really really has been the driving force behind the GLAM campaign with IRMA. following the conference, we actually developed a toolkit. And during the conference, we actually had some colleagues that were interviewing folks about lubricant access. And we turned that into a toolkit, which has been produced in English and also in French. And I'm happy to report that soon we'll actually have a version of it in Spanish, but it's actually going to be adapted and much more useful for folks that are working in Latin America. But what's in the toolkit? It's pretty short, about 12 pages, but really it goes into a lot of what Marc-André talked about, the findings from the survey and some updates of that around lubricant access and safety. We actually did a review of African national strategic plans, but where is lubricant mentioned in strategic plans? There are some case studies of challenges and success around making lubricant accessible. And also we did an online survey, and so there's some findings from what lube distribution and access. But the core piece of it are really what can advocates do to really help improve access to safe condom-compatible lubricant. Some of the findings that are included in this toolkit, with the review of the national strategic plans, we found only 7 African countries out of 43 actually mentioned lubricant. And there's a list of the countries that do mention it. And that similarly, most procurement has been done through international visitors and travel, and dissemination is happening through peer educators, however, primarily in urban areas where it does exist. However, stigma and discrimination was a main factor in lack of access. The folks were afraid to ask for it. Folks, you know, similarly around what MLUB is about is that there's just folks aren't even thinking that this is an important issue. I also kind of wanted to highlight the Global Forum's online survey that was done in 2012. One of the questions that was asked around access to was, you know, I have complete access to free or low-cost condoms. You can see at 48%, but condom-compatible lubricant at 19%. This is actually findings from the African respondents to their survey, of which there were just below 700 people. But once again, we can see there's clearly a lack of access. So what can activists do? And I think, you know, some things that come through the toolkit, what we've learned, what we see are happening, are first adopting the tagline NLOOP. When we see the word condoms, we say NLOOP, just to make sure that that's included. But I think it's really about engaging decision makers at the major donors, at the Global Fund, at PEPFAR, with our ministries of health, within UN agencies. Recognizing procurement procedures around lubricant are vital. And too often we've seen some of our colleagues in the field who are doing this, and it's, you know, it's pretty simple that lubricant gets added in, and actually there is procurement available, and then we start seeing more lubricant happen. I think what's vital, though, is that we continue to work with our national and local governments to ensure that they are including this, that that's a much more sustainable model than some of our larger donors who are currently, as we're going to hear from Gift in a bit, who are providing lubricant. I think we also, as Marc-André referred to a lot, need to help community folks understand what is condom-compatible lubricant and what is not. And in terms of, you know, once again, it's a bit of a nuanced message around safety, but we do have some answers to help folks, though they are using condom-compatible lubricant. And I think another initiative that some folks have taken on is really looking at local manufacturing and looking at ways that we can work with pharmaceuticals, we can work with companies who could be manufacturing lubricant in Africa. Included in the toolkit, but I wanted to expand it a bit, are some successes that we have seen lubricant happen. I'm fortunate to work with a community-based, what we call GMT, gay, MSM, and trans organizations globally. And I just wanted to share some successes that I'm aware of. Our colleagues in Ukraine actually were quite successful in getting lubricant included in their Global Fund through the CCM process, through their Ministry of Health. Unfortunately, the quality of the lubricant that was procured was quite bad, and actually a lot of lubricant had to be dumped. In a minute, you're going to hear from Gift from Malawi and how they've been working with the PEPFAR program to have lubricant be provided. Although it's on a limited scale, they're hoping to see more there. You know, I think a big success was in Burundi, where a few years ago, AMFAR supported a movement to actually work through the CCM process and then work through their Global Fund commitments to actually procure lubricant, which is pretty accessible now to the community. Similarly, something happened in Kenya where the Global Fund is supporting this, and I just wanted to highlight a colleague in Thailand just sent me that actually there's a transgender-specific, it's actually being marketed specifically to the trans community now in Thailand, so we see some success that's actually happening. I also wanted to highlight currently the Global Lubricant Access Mobilization Campaign. We've been offering mini-grants. Last year, we actually funded three projects that Irma was responsible for funding, but with support from AMFAR and AVAC. We actually supported a group in Liberia, Stop AIDS in Liberia, Irma, their affiliates in Nigeria, and another organization in Zambia. And these were small projects, $5,000, six-month projects, but basically to raise advocacy. It wasn't to support the purchase of lubricant, but really to advocate for access to safe condom-compatible lubricant. And luckily this year, 2014, we're actually going to have another round of grants. We actually have an open call for proposals right now. The procedures, the application forms are available on the AMFAR website and also on the Rectal Microbicides website, but the deadline is March 25th, and those are specifically for Africa. And that's basically what I wanted to say about lubricant access and the GLAM campaign. I'm leaving with a picture from Liberia of an NGO funded by the Global Fund that's got this on the front of their vehicle that the NGO uses. But it's once again, it's a pretty simple concept about when we hear the word condom, we say the word and lube. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Kent, for that overview. So to continue this thread, I'd like to lead into Gift's presentation, but first I just want to check if you can hear us, Gift, and if you can speak. Gift, are you on the line?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Gift. Let me just properly introduce you before you start. Folks, Gift is one of the strong-minded LGBTI human rights activists of Malawi, and in his role as executive director of the Center for the Development of People, or CEDAP, he has been instrumental in bringing about some of the strides recently taken by the community in Malawi despite hostile conditions. Gift has also collaborated on HIV research among men who have sex with men, and the research he's collaborated on has been published in several scientific journals, including The Lancet. Gift currently represents key populations in the local Global Fund Country Coordinating Mechanism, or CCM, in Malawi. Thank you for joining us, Gift. Please go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you. I think my presentation will look at what we have achieved in terms of the advocacy for us to be accessing the lubricant. I think my first statement has been and has always been that in the context of Malawi, but also this applies to many African countries where lubricant is looked at as a hot commodity because of its scarcity. It's a hot commodity where the community on the ground do scramble for because they cannot access it. But for us to start accessing the lubricant, I think we have gone through a number of stages. The first stage that we have benefited is the data that we have generated in Malawi in terms of the previous HIV studies that we have conducted in Malawi. That actually has been used for advocacy. Not only to do the advocacy for the availability of lubricants, but also to advocate for the programs to target innocent communities on the ground. But also using the same data, we have been also able to map out at local level in terms of the stakeholders whom we could reach, but also whom we could use to help to strengthen the voice at the grassroots level. but also to take advantage of the policy issues that have been going on in Malawi. But as well, at international level, we have had some policy discussions. In this case, I remember we were invited to Washington, D.C., where PEFA was discussing the key population strategy that also included the MSM. AMFA supported us. And we raised also the issue of lubricants during that forum. But also using the UN as a mechanism also to raise the issues in terms of the availability and the scarce of lubricants at local level, because they sit in most of the HIV/AIDS meetings. So they also act as a link to make sure that those voices are heard at different levels. But also we have taken the advantage of the MSM program, especially in Malawi. Whenever they are having the country, whenever they are discussing the country programs, we were able also to use our existing partners to start raising the issue, because we were looking at the program to target MSM as a package, not only a single program, but we could make sure that condoms and lube could be part of the discussion whenever we are demanding the programs for MSM community on the ground. So after all this advocacy that we have done in Malawi, where also we had also some interpersonal communication with the in-country PEFA, the USAID, the UN teams, where we developed that interpersonal relationship with different individuals. I think it works to our advantage, because we were able to get the first procurement of the lubricants in large quantity. Initially, it was also very difficult for us to just import because of the illegal environment. We couldn't just import lubricants. So the coming in of these bilateral donors, but as well as the international agencies, it was very easy for them to procure in large quantity. So in our case, we had used it through PSI Malawi, who procured a large quantity of lubricants that will last us for the next 2 years. So because of this, we have also seen that in terms of the procurement, but also in terms of the distribution, it is very easy, because we are using these already existing structure through PSI for this distribution, but as well for procurement. But in terms of the challenges, I think it's one thing that we noted is on the branding and marketing, because our community, especially in the rural areas, do not know lubricants, and have been using the Vaseline, a range of lubricants. But we need to market. We need also to make sure that we brand our products, because we have had some cases where people would not want to carry the most visible lubricants. So the issue of branding also emerged. One thing also that we noted as a challenge is that at corporate level, you find that we have all these existing strategies, such as the condom strategy, as a guiding document for distribution, for managing the condoms and for the general population. But those strategies do not talk about the lubricants. So it's another area that we are also thinking of, saying I think as a country, the same applies to other countries, we need also to look at how we can have a condom and lubricant strategy for the MSM community. So that's one challenge, to push that agenda. It's also, it will also require data that can facilitate that process. I think the other thing has already been talked about on the issue of ownership, because the lubricants that we have procured, that we have, that will last for the next 2 years, have been funded by donors, but as government, I think we need our government to take the ownership. That also means that in terms of sustainability, that will be there because the government will be on the driving seat to make sure that lubricants are accessible by the NSM community. I think the other issues on the environment, as we reconcile the legal and the policy environment, I think that's another challenge, because whenever you are distributing condoms and lube, I think issues of legal are always raised. I think we cannot run away when you are doing the advocacy in terms of the availability or accessibility of lubricants. We cannot run away the legal environment in terms of pushing also the advocacy around improving the structural barriers for people to access these products. I think for us, the next level is also to engage the global funding mechanisms to make sure that we have also lubricants procured through those mechanisms. And that's our goal. But also the next goal is also to push, as I've already said, for the condom and lubricant strategy, so that we have we can address all the challenges in that document. Let me stop there. If people have questions, maybe they can ask me those questions. But let me also acknowledge the role that AMSA has played to us, specifically doing the international advocacy, pushing at the PESFA level in Washington. I think that really helped us, because we connected us at that level with our advocacy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gift. So we are going to track back to safety of lubricants, specifically in South Africa. And Kevin had just given us the rationale for engaging in the study that he started with his group, and was about to describe what they actually did and what they found and how it's of impact to people who advocate for lubricants and who use lubricants. Kevin,
thank you very much. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Thank you very much. And I'm sorry for that. I'm not sure whether we should blame AT&T or Telkom in South Africa. But let's continue. So I'm going to move on to what we actually did. So what we did is we procured a whole variety of lubricants from Adult World. Adult World is the largest sex shop chain franchise in South Africa. We specifically chose a city-based store. The one in the photograph that you see there is actually opposite the University Department of Medicine. We chose a centrally based store because we were hoping to get a store that had high traffic by MSM. And we also chose a store that had on-site video booths. So these stores also function as sex on-site venues because they have these cubicles where porn videos are screened. And we asked them to provide us with their best-selling brands of lube. And then those are obviously the lubes that we assayed. So we took these lubricants from, We took these lubricants from Adult World, and they were assayed by the University of Cape Town in the Division of Chemical Pathology. And we screened them for osmolality and glycerol. But glycerol is the substance in water-based lube that makes them slippery. And generally, the more glycerol a lubricant has in it, the higher the osmolality is. And if you remember from Mark's talk, high osmolality lubricants are going to dehydrate and shrivel up cells in the anal mucosa. In addition to those lubes, we also analyzed common food-based lubricant substitutes that people in our clinics report using for anal sex. We looked specifically at albumin or egg white, and at low-fat, plain, unflavored yogurt. Now, here's a table of the lubricants we assayed and of the osmolalities that we found. And the thing to note here is that most of the osmolalities are extremely high. The osmolality of human plasma is about 280 milliosmoles per liter, and really that is what we should be aiming at for the ideal lubricant. And if you have a look at the lubes at the top of the list, they're extremely high, some in excess of 9,000 milliosmoles per liter. the lubricant that is most commonly distributed by ANOVA Health Institute and Health for Men screens somewhere towards the bottom, towards the safer end, but also not very low. If you have a look at the two lube substitutes, low-fat yogurt and egg white, they have very low osmolalities, and theoretically they could be safe for anal use as a lubricant. However, when we're talking about regions that have a lot of food insecurity, these products are going to be used for food and eaten rather than used for sex. The last bar of that table shows you that semen has a very low osmolality, although clearly we're not recommending that anybody use that as a lubricant. So this was the title of the article that we published. The URL is listed on the slide, and access to this is free, so anybody who wants to access can do so from the website. Our study conclusions really were that most of our water-based lubes in South Africa are hyperosmolar. Some of them are clearly better than others. One of the problems we noted is that none of the lubricants assayed included a statement of osmolality on the packaging. And as I've said, food products have low osmolality and could potentially be used as lubricant substitutes. So what are our recommendations after this study? Well, local awareness needs to be raised regarding lubricant safety, particularly for anal use. We need access to correct MSM-targeted IEC materials. These are being created and distributed by various organizations, and the field is far better now than it used to be, but more could be done. We definitely think that messaging must promote the use of lubricants together with condoms. And then we feel that if you have a choice, you should probably choose a low osmolality lubricant, and that is especially true if lubricants are being used in the absence of condoms. So, well, that's all nice, but what does it mean at the end of the day? We certainly did not prove and didn't aim to prove that hyperosmolar lubricants are toxic if we use them anally or that they increase HIV. Mark went through some of the studies that have attempted to do that. We have, however, had an impact. Osmolality is now included in lubricant tender specifications by the South African Department of Health and by NGOs that are particularly MSM-focused in the field of healthcare. So we feel the study has got us a large amount of exposure, and we feel that exposure is good and hopefully has helped to put these issues onto the table. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Kevin, and thank you for our presenters for all your great presentations, and thank you for everyone for staying with us through our technical turbulence. I think I'm just going to try and pick out a few questions that were asked in the chat box. We will not have enough time to answer all of them in detail. But one thing that came out very clearly, I think, from the two presentations on safety is that osmolality is very important. It's important for it seems like there's an emerging recommendation that people use lower osmolality lubricants. So the first question would then go to Marc-André to ask, do you have recommendations about which lubes that are out there in the market to use and which to avoid?
Yeah, I wish I did. I really wish I did. But as I said, our bottom line messaging is that, you know, the data that's available today really doesn't tell us if any particular brand or type of lube has a real-world impact on the risk of acquiring STIs or HIV. As I mentioned, you know, a summary of almost all the independent studies that have ever been done on this can fit on one PowerPoint slide, which is a bit pathetic given that we're 30-plus years into the epidemic that we haven't looked at this issue more seriously. And, you know, given the small number of studies, yes, it seems like there's an indication that perhaps, you know, osmolality is an issue, that we should avoid hyperosmolar lubes. But again, you know, almost all of this is based on laboratory settings. And if, you know, the history of research into HIV prevention has taught us anything, looking at vaccines and microbicides and all kinds of things, is that some things might have a clear indication of being X, Y, or Z in laboratory settings. And once you start moving to animal studies, and most importantly, studies in humans, you get a completely different picture. So is osmolarity the thing we need to worry about? Is it something else? Is there a need to worry at all? We just don't know. So does any of this have an impact in real life, in humans, having sex, using these products? unfortunately, we really don't have an answer to that question yet. So in the meantime, you know, and people keep asking, you know, what should we do? What should we avoid? You know, and some people have suggested, you know, if you're using a product and it doesn't feel good, it hurts, it's uncomfortable, you should probably avoid it. That's probably a good sign that it's not doing some good things. And people often report that from water-based lubricants that tend to dry out and they get sticky and it gets uncomfortable and it hurts. That's probably not a good thing. A lot of people are, you know, thinking, well, we should move to silicone-based lubricants because they don't have this problem with osmolality. Well, part of the problem there, that may be true, but that hypothesis hasn't really been tested. One of the problems is that a lot of the tests that are done in these studies require the product to be dissolved in water for the test to be conducted. So I mentioned a handful of studies that have been done so far, and you know, very few, I said, you know, maybe 5 dozen products have been tested. Out of that, there's probably less than a dozen silicone-based lubes that have been tested, and that's because a lot of the tests that are being used can't be done on silicone-based lubes. So they, at the moment, it's possible that they appear safer just because they haven't been tested as much as water-based lubes. That's just a theory, but until we have the hard data, it's really hard to tell. I mean, a lot of people, if they can get their hands on silicone-based lube, which in a lot of places costs a small fortune, if they can get their hands on it, that's great. And a lot of people prefer to use a silicone-based lube to water-based lube because it doesn't dry out in the same way. But we really don't know. And, I mean, trust me, if anyone in the world should have an answer to this question, arguably I would be the one. I've been looking at this for the past several years, and I'm just as dumbfounded when I'm standing in a store in front of a wall full of different types of lubes as to which ones I should pick that might increase or decrease my risk around HIV and STI. I just don't know. I end up going for the lubes that I think feel the best. And that's all that really we can do for now. And unfortunately, given you know what Kent and Gift talked about lube access and Kevin as well, the truth of the matter is that most people can't get their hands on, you know, don't have this luxury of my confusion in front of a wall of options of lubes. Most people don't have access to any lube at all. And if they are using condoms, certainly getting some condom-compatible lube is going to increase the risk that that condom doesn't break or slip off. So that's a good thing, and that's really all we can suggest for now is to use condom-compatible lubes if you're using condoms. If you're not using a condom, there's really not much we can say one way or another. Just use something that doesn't feel bad is about as good as it can get. And again, to Kevin's point, he made a point on one of his slides. You know, it's fine to say avoid hyperosmolar lubes. It's not like you can find that on the labeling of lubes. You can't find that. You know, sometimes you can't even find the list of ingredients there, or you can't pronounce them. You don't know what it means. It's, you know, there's very little helpful information to tell the end user right now, which is why most of our awareness raising around this has been with other advocates, researchers, policymakers to push a research agenda to get answers. We haven't done major messaging out there to the general public about lube safety because what's the use of raising alarms if we don't have anything practical and substantial to tell people about what they can do to reduce their risk or if there even is a risk. That's not very useful.
Thank you, Marc-Andre. That's actually a very good segue into the question I was going to ask Kevin. Kevin, since you mentioned the SABS stamp of approval, which is the sign in South Africa on consumer products, which lets the consumer know that it's been tested by an independent authority and that it's safe, depending on whatever criteria they use. So I wanted to ask Kevin if you think, bearing in mind what Marc-Andre just said about osmolality not being a good enough measure of safety yet, do you think it's worth it advocating for lubricants to be marked with osmolality so that end users know what the level of osmolality is before they buy a lubricant?
It's a difficult question to answer that because we're not entirely certain that the major toxicity or infective or influence on HIV transmission and infection really is due to the osmolality. It seems to be biologically plausible that it might be, But again, we need more research to be certain about this. I think that maybe a good thing would be to really push towards bulk procurers of lube considering osmolality rather than the end user. I don't know that we would be successful in getting these millions of lube companies to sell lube in the country to list that really in their ingredients. The other problem is that I didn't mention in the slide is we assessed glycerol and osmolality. We didn't really look if there were other ingredients in those lubricants that could be potentially toxic to rectal epithelial cells. So we may find a low osmolality lube that people may preferentially choose because of that low osmolality may have some toxic preservative in it that makes it a high-risk lube to use. So I'm not really sure that I can even answer that question.
Thank you, Kevin. We're going to switch a bit and go to the accessibility of lubricants. And I wanted to start by asking Kent or posing a question that was posed by one of the participants. Do folks in Latin America have access or can they be plugged into the work that the global access, the global lubricant access movement does? I think we spoke about what GLAM did in Africa, but do people in other regions have an opportunity to advocate through GLAM?
Sure, Calypso. Definitely GLAM is a global campaign. To date, most of our effort has been focused on Africa. However, as I mentioned, we're coming out with a toolkit in Spanish and English for Latin America that I'll hope to have by August, September is the plan. Currently, the mini grants that we've been given out also have been focused on Africa, but I hope in the future we can look to other parts of the world to be supported for that. So the colleague who asked if they can apply for Guyana, unfortunately that's currently only available in Africa. But clearly lubricant access is not just an African problem. Our folks in Latin America, the Caribbean, and Eastern Europe, Central Asia, Asia Pacific also struggle a lot. And so we're aware of that. And, you know, once again, the toolkit, I think, can be looked at and used elsewhere. It was designed really for African colleagues in that we've recognized a huge deficit, whereas some other parts of the world it's not as great of a deficit, but it still is a problem.
Thanks, Kent. And I finally wanted to ask Gift, what advice would you give to participants of the webinar who are sitting in their country and they know there's a shortage of lube and they want to get involved and they want to advocate for lube? What was your first step in advocating for lubricants in Malawi?
Yeah, I think the first step is also to get the data, to use the data that is available in most of the countries. One for programming, comprehensive programming, which also can include lubricants and condoms. So that's an entry point to start that conversation with the different strategic partners. But also, I think the other issue is to start using the data that is now available, specifically on lubricants, to advance our cause in terms of making the lube available, but as well accessible by the MSM community at grassroots level.
Okay, so evidence-based advocacy. Thank you very much, Gift, and thank you to all our participants, and thank you to everyone who posted a question and everyone who just listened and stayed with us. This brings us to the end of the webinar. Thank you for engaging in conversation, and as a reminder, this webinar will be available on our website for download and for streaming, and of course, the slides will also be made available. After this call ends, there'll be a very short survey. Please help us to improve our programming by giving your answer. To see all the webinars that the Global Forum has hosted, please go to bit.ly/MSMGF webinars. That's MSMGF webinars. Thanks, everyone, for joining, and have a good day and have a good evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please stand by.